Welcome to the Insane Asylum. It's the Night of the Living Dreads podcast.
All right, and welcome back to the Insane Asylum. The Night of Living Dreads podcast. Podcast covers all and anything horror. As always, I am Otis B. Dreads. I have Mrs. Dreads with me. How are you, Mrs. Dreads?
I am good.
Are you?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm sure.
I always have to ask you, because I never know. You can have a smile on your face and not be so good.
I know, because you told me before I was emotionless.
No, I said you had resting bitch face. Which is kind of hard. Well, yeah, I guess. But you are not a sociopath. You are not a psychopath that I know of yet. All right. Hey, we got a really cool fucking show tonight. Got a dear friend of ours on. He's going to hang out for the entire podcast. We're going to talk all kinds of things. We're going to talk horror movies. We're going to talk paranormal. We're going to share some ghost stories. It's just going to be a hodgepodge of just a horror talk all over the spectrum. But first, we got to give out some horror love. That's right. Gore Hounds of Horror on Facebook. Check them out. Best damn horror group on Facebook. They have an open and closed group. Check them both out. Like them both. Become a member. And as well as the Misfit Horror Fiend Club. You like the Misfits? You like horror? You jumped the gun on that one. I ask you that all the time, man. If you like the Misfits, you're like, yeah, I kind of do. No. Misfits, if you like the Misfits, you like some old school punk, that kind of things, particularly the Misfits, and you like horror, that's where you need to go. Slaughterhouse. Slaughter on Wayne.
Slaughter on Garth.
I think it's clever, and you still laugh every time you say it. That's right, Slaughterhouse. Check them out. After Dark, the watch party group, I think, of the bunch. Mm-hmm. Check them out. And, of course, my favorite, only because of the name. Not really my favorite out of the groups, but I mean it's one of my
most original names.
Most original name, Zombie Boob.
My God,
Zombie Boob, check them out. All these guys allow us to post the podcast over there and reach new ears, and of course the last but very much not least. The non-horror group, and that'd be Cannabis Arcade. All kinds of dark humor and talk about sweet, sweet Mary Jane.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all she has to say. That's right. So, check all of those guys out. And, of course, Night of Living Dreads on Facebook, nightoflivingdreads.com. And where else are we at? You forgot the damn name. We are on Stitcher. That's right. No Living Dreads on Stitcher.
I was just thinking. My mind was wandering. And now next week they're going to come out.
Get your head in the game, Mrs. Dreads.
Next week they're going to come out. We'll see a trailer for Night of the Living Boob. Well, that'll be the next movie out.
I'd watch it.
You'd own it.
I'd own it. I already want to own it. All right. So we got, as I mentioned, a really good friend of ours. A few weeks back, I did a podcast, and I did it by myself. I think you were at work, and excuse me, and it was about our Hillview Manor experience up there in Newcastle, Pennsylvania.
Right.
And I also talked about, another place that I wanted to go to. I think it was Pennhurst.
Yeah.
Was it? And I played a little clip, which we are going to play later. But our guest for the entire show, good friend Dominic, who actually recorded that that little potty mouth female spirit we heard. So let me just cut right to the chase. Dominic, how are you, my friend? Thanks for talking with us here in the Insane Asylum, my friend.
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on. I'm looking forward to discussing this, and I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on Hillview as well, because we never really discussed it.
No, like, we didn't. Yeah, we discussed a lot of, you know, trying to get our footage transferred back and forth. There was computer issues and whatnot. But I don't think that we really sat down. Maybe just small talk after the event, but nothing like what we're going to get into tonight. Before we get into, like the paranormal in Hillview, it is August 10th. That we are recording this. It is Saturday, August 10th, yes. 2019. And it happens to be the 50th anniversary of the La Bianca murders. And it also, yesterday, well, the 8th and the 9th was the 50th anniversary of the Tate murders. Now, it's not like we're like celebrating this. You want to say something, Mr. George?
I think about it, that's our daughter and my sister's birthday, the 8th and the 9th.
The 8th and the 9th, that's right. My oldest daughter's birthday is the 8th on the day of the Tate murders, and my sister-in-law, your younger sister, on the 9th. So did you realize this, Dominic? Because I honestly didn't until about 2 hours ago, to be honest.
Yeah, I never even thought about it. I didn't, you know, the date of the month paid no significance in my day today. So until I heard that, like, I was unaware. And I'm like, wow.
Well, you know, on Reels, the cable network Reels, they do a lot of, you know, shit about celebrities and whatnot. And I kept seeing all day, it's just nothing but about Sharon Tate, about the Manson murders, about the Manson family, interviews.
He did his funeral.
Yeah, they literally, and I'd like to talk about that for a minute, but yeah, they did, you know, a whole thing called, you know, Charles Manson's funeral. Do you know his grandson got the body, okay, had to fight literally to retrieve his grandfather's body and give him a proper burial?
Oh, I did not know that. What were they trying to do with it?
Well, there was like four or five other people that were trying to claim him too.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, the guy's name is Jason Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife stated that if they would have left his body in the hands of the prison where he died, they would have thrown him out like fucking garbage.
Oh, yeah.
And, absolutely. You know, and Jason's whole thought, his grandson, his whole mindset is that, okay, look, this is my grandfather. Okay, yes, he hurt, you know, he did, you know, a lot of things that a lot of people don't approve of. No, I never classify him as a serial killer, and that literally pisses me off when people do. But he was like, I believe he's my grandfather. He's, you know, my blood. Now, you knew that Charles Manson had a son, right?
Correct, yeah.
And he killed himself.
I didn't know that part.
Yeah, he killed himself, and it stated that he killed himself because he didn't want to end up like his father.
Don't they actually say they have proof that he had like 6 or 7 kids, and they think he might have had 14 or 15 or something?
I have heard that. And that's probably quite possible because
there was a lot going on there.
There's Spawn Ranch. Yes, there was, yep. My friend. Open
think
love.
Think why it's called Spawn Ranch.
Spawn.
Right.
There you go. Right. I see what you did there. That was clever. That was witty as fuck there. Mrs. Dredge is on her game tonight.
Indeed.
But yeah, he and this is the son. This Jason Freeman is the son of, you know, his father's the one, you know, they killed himself. And there was, you know, like four or five people, like, you know, Jody has said, there are four or five people that actually were fighting for his body.
Do you remember when that that real young girl, that 25-year-old girl, he was supposedly supposed to be marrying her
in prison?
Mm-hmm.
It came to find out that that was the whole reason that she wanted to marry him. Was for the fact of when something did happen to him, that she could claim his body and make a profit.
Right.
Oh. Okay, yeah. I could see that.
Yeah, profit over people. I mean, come on. It's the American way. And what they did was they literally showed in this, and I'm sure, you know, I'm going to look it up on, you know, see if I can maybe find it on YouTube, Charles Manson, the funeral.
Yeah.
And if I can find it, I will post it in the description over there at nightlivingdreads.com. And they cremated him. His grandson literally pushed the button, you know, to close the door on it. And they went and spread his ashes in a creek out in the woods, like he thought that, you know, his grandfather would have wanted.
Yeah, somewhere here in Ohio.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
The whole Manson, it's just mind blowing what Charles Manson spent his entire life in prison for.
Right.
What he, you know what I mean? Like at the end of the day, like yeah, he was not a good guy. He
sure.
definitely was not a good guy. But, I mean, his entire life, I guess you could say he was guilty of being a accomplice to murder in the LaBianca house.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is accused of tying up the LaBiancas. And
yes.
then he left.
Yes.
So he can be an accomplice to two homicides, and perhaps that is enough. To justify the rest of his life in prison, but I just like how famous the media made him when you look at how small the actual crime was.
Right.
It served like we got into earlier talking earlier. It got into this whole, you know, serving a bigger agenda of demonizing a hippie movement and destroying it. And getting everybody back in line and turning everybody back into nice young Republicans.
Right. and you know, I mean, and you know, it just seemed to work out, you know, for those pushing that particular, you know, agenda because of all the turmoil going on at the time. And you got, you know, this hippie and they're strange. Okay. They don't act like us. They don't act like
but
that.
But the establishment, yeah.
Right, the establishment, right. You know, so, and, you know, they're using a lot of LSD. There's a lot of, you know, just free love being floated
yep.
around. And, you know, so that was looked down on the general society. So, you know, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe that I heard in one of those little programs we were watching on Reels, that Manson actually said, you know, don't let me out. I really have nowhere to go.
Yeah, he wanted to stay.
He literally wanted to stay in prison because he had nowhere to go. But due to overcrowding, they pretty much forced him out. Now,
yeah,
I'm not saying that, you know, okay, it's you know, it's the jailer's fault for letting Manson out. You know, that's too simplistic for me.
Yeah, and, yeah. I, okay. I didn't know if you were done or not. Yeah.
I didn't know if I was done or not either.
Well, yeah, no, to get to that point, that's Manson's whole life was incarceration.
Yes.
Like, that's all he knew. Well, before that, it was even worse. I mean, I don't know. It was always bad, I guess, because when he was young, His mother was hooking, and she'd dress him up like a little girl so the Johns would like it and stuff like that. So we already had that happening. So there was already psychological damage done to the dude at a young age. And then, he ended up abandoned or something. Then he lived with his grandmother or something. Yes. And then he started doing, like, small crimes. Because he didn't know how to get by.
He was pretty much a petty car thief. Up to the point that you're talking about. Yeah, he did spend a lot of his time with, and his uncle, Uncle Jess, I believe his name was. You watch Charles Manson Superstar on YouTube. I think he talks about Uncle Jess. Had one of them long rifles down in the holler.
Right, yep. Yeah, it was his whole life was incarceration, and he gets into, like, the petty crime stuff, and he ends up in juvenile facilities, and then he's the small kid there.
Yeah.
And so he gets raped, he gets beat, he gets bullied, he gets picked on. So, like, I don't think at any point, I don't know what he might have done in a past life if people believe in that stuff, but he must have done something bad because from day one, I could see why this guy had a problem with the world.
Yeah. No, I really can too. I think that's a valid point. And I think some people, because I've expressed over time and, you know, those that know me know that, you know, I'm a fan, not. And, you know, because fan is literally short for fanatic, but I'm not a Charles Manson fanatic. I think he's very interesting.
He's fascinating. Yeah.
He's very fascinating. I know a lot of people are like, oh, you're a Charles Manson, you know, sympathizer. Well, okay. I can understand where you're coming, you know, with that. And maybe to a point, yeah, I know he's not a mass murderer. You know, I mean, let's really look at what's going on there. Not a mass murderer, so I don't know. I just think he's a very fascinating guy. I think a lot of serial killers are, you know, fascinating individuals when you really start looking, at all the different aspects of, you know, what went down. It's intriguing. You're a big, I guess serial killer documentary kind of guy, aren't you, Don?
I mean, I started reading whatever you want to call them, true crime books or whatever, when I was a teenager. I'd go to Barnes & Noble and just buy them, because I was fascinated in the psychology of people who become serial killers. I found Charles Manson to be particularly fascinating because I like a lot of the things he talks about, a lot of his ideas and stuff, like just his philosophy. He says a lot of things. How am I looking to say it? Like, he's in the right place where he's going with a lot of stuff. And Charles Manson's world, like, I mean, up until the whole Tate and LaBianca murders, like, I don't know. It didn't seem like it was such a bad world to me. Like, I get there's petty crime and there's some hustling and hooking and crooking and there's some drug dealing going on and stuff. But, like, where I grow up and where I come from, that's just everyday life. Like, you see it, sure. People are doing it. So, like, I mean, he could have been any neighbor if you take away that night. And he had a lot of good philosophies, a lot of good ideas. I like the whole Atwa thing and stuff like that. But, like I was saying, psychologically, I've always, since a young age, been fascinated with it because it's weird to me the way people can go and live a life for so long, for a certain way, and then... And this is more the serial killer, not the Charles Manson, because I don't consider him a serial killer either.
Exactly.
This is more like the Ramirez's and the Dahmers and that kind, the Bundy stuff, where, like, everything before that first murder, like, every day up until that point was a normal day. Like, that first murder is when their life changed. And what happened, and that's the thing I always try to understand. I never... could figure out. I never probably will. Maybe it drives everybody crazy who looks into this subject. Is why was this day different than the day before? Why was this the day he decided that they were going to cross that line? Like, what did that? What happened that day where it was like, I can't think about this anymore, or whatever. I have to act. I have to do this. This has to happen. Right. And it seems like something breaks psychologically. because it's like some people can go, some people kill when they're fucking 8 years old. You know what I mean? You see them, you can go look up on YouTube children who kill. I saw a thing where a little girl like killed her. She was like 7 or 8. She killed her little brother. All she did was torture this kid. And like, and they were asking her questions, and she's like, I wanted him to die. Like, I wanted him dead. Like, she was like an 8 year old sociopath, like just cold blooded. And like, watching the interview is chilling. But yeah, some people might make it till they're 50. Yeah, and then one day when they're 50, it's like, today is the day I'm going to do this.
Exactly. And you know what, you know, when you were talking about the children, what really intrigues me is, how does a 7 or 8 year old, what is going on in that little life, that short life that they've, you know, lived so far, what's going on to make them literally want to murder, to rationalize murder? We're talking about a 7 or 8 year old child rationalizing murder. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, that something is absolutely crazy.
There's some kind of exposure to some type of violence or something, because
it has to be.
Like, that doesn't seem like something that a 7-year-old just naturally would develop without being exposed to it in some kind of form somehow.
I think at 7 years old, I just found my penis.
Right?
And I learned what that thing
wanted,
can do.
I wanted the little Boba Fett figure that shot rockets.
Right. Yeah, I was collecting Star Wars figures, man. I had the fucking Millennium Falcon. I had all the little figures.
Right. My parents were mad because I didn't have enough stormtroopers. I'm like, do you see how many there are in the movie?
Exactly. I need an army of these, Mom.
Yes, I need 40 stormtroopers.
I still remember when I was buying them, I would get an allowance per week, and I get $3. I have to borrow like 15 cents from my
change,
mom.
Oh, the change, yep.
Yeah, because the action figures, okay, the you know, little figures, they were $2.99, but with tax they were $3.14.
Yeah,
so, you know, I'd get my
$3.
Yes, I'd go to Toys R Us, and I was getting new ones all the time.
I don't know how this worked out.
I was talking about smoking Star Wars, but hey.
That 7-year-old serial killers.
Right. Yeah, damn them.
Right.
No, yeah, that's absolutely, you know, nuts that, you know, and that's what fascinated me as well. Like, how do you go from, because you watch these serial killer documentaries and they talk about, oh, you know, and you see these little pictures, you know, these pictures when they're little, and they're all
right.
Like, oh, and they're like, oh, look, and you're looking at some of these kids, and you're like, damn, he's a cute little kid. How did he go from that to, you know, eating his neighbor? I mean, what happened in between? I mean, I was like 15 years old, you know, going up and reading about Dr. Kevorkian.
Right.
Just why was he doing this? What was his fascination with, you know, helping people, you know, kill themselves? I get the whole thing on it, but, you know, I mean, it just fascinated me. And that, I think, Dr. Kevorkian really got me started with looking into serial killers.
Yeah, he's
not that he was one. I'm not really saying that.
Well, I will. So that's
okay.
That's why
you're here.
he's somebody. When you think about it, he's a man who went to college for, I don't know, what, 4, 6, 8 years, however long. He got his degrees and master's or whatever. And he becomes a doctor to help people end their lives, which is
the opposite of what, like, we all know as a doctor of doing. They're trying, you know, most doctors are like, trying to help you save your life, get you healthier. He's like, you know what? You're pretty fucking sick. Step into my van.
So I question, I mean, pretty much the psychology behind of any individual who becomes a medical professional to, you know, find ways to end life. Like,
right.
That's the whole opposite of what it's supposed to be.
Right.
But granted, there are, there are incurable, you know, there are things in this world. I mean, I don't know. Is it one of them, like, necessary evils? Because, like, I can sit here and question that and say Dr. Kevorkian, in my mind, was a serial killer who was just looking for a way to do that. But at the same time, I'm not suffering from a terminal illness, and I'm knowing that there's no hope for me, and I'm just going to be miserable until I just die. Right. So maybe I would be happy to have a Dr. Kevorkian if I was in that situation. I don't know. He's a touchy one. Now, someone like Richard Ramirez or what about Son of Sam, David Berkowitz,
Green River,
what was
Taylor.
Happening in New York, right. Like that, like Berkowitz, like there was something else going on there, right? There was more than just him. It was like,
yeah,
a couple people involved in that. He was involved in some kind of cult stuff. I don't even know what all that was about.
Well, you know, I think it's Berkowitz. They said there was a connection between him and Ramirez.
Okay, I'd never heard that.
They were maybe affiliated with the same kind of cult, just on different sides of the U.S.
See, that would make sense, yeah. Although, I don't know, was Ramirez in a cult?
Well,
I thought he was kind of like a loner.
Yeah, I mean, these are just theories that are out there.
Yeah,
I guess
he
the media and the layman folk, because of him walking into court showing, you know, the pentagram,
right,
on his fucking hand and everything.
People, yeah,
like, oh,
I mean,
he,
there's no doubt
he's got to be in a cult.
Yeah, there. I mean, there's no doubt he was a devout devil worshipper. Like, not.
Sure.
I don't use the word saintness for him. I use the word devil worshipper, because I define those two things differently.
I agree.
But yeah, Ramirez to me was always the until I understood more about him. Like, he was always the one that fascinated me the most out of the serial killers, because his killings were, I guess, I don't know, they were a part of a satanic ritual, some kind of sex magic in a drugged out kind of haze, like. He just drove them freeways, and they,
right.
I guess he was smoking crack and jamming metal and just getting high as fuck. And then, like, he just, this is the exit. Like, he was letting the devil control him, GPS him. And
GPS.
This is the street I'm turning on. And this is the house I'm going to stop in front of. And who's ever inside is going to die. Didn't matter who. It didn't matter who his victims were. Like, it didn't matter if he walked in and
no.
It was kids or adults or elderly or white or black or Asian or whoever was inside of that house. He didn't have a type, where
yeah.
Almost every other serial killer has a type of victim.
Absolutely.
Right? Ted Bundy liked college girls. Like, he liked them 18 to 25-year-old pretty young girls.
Right.
Jeffrey Dahmer liked guys. John Wayne Gacy, like young teenage boys, they all had specific victims, but anybody could have been Richard Ramirez's victim.
And that's what was so terrifying about him. And he even said that,
yeah.
That I mean, you can watch him say it himself. He was like, pretty much just what you said, you know, some serial killers like boys, some like, you know, girls, some like, you know, this type person, that type person,
yeah.
You know. Hey, everyone was fair game.
He just liked killing for Satan. Yeah,
yep.
Didn't matter who. and whoever it was, 90% of the time, he raped them. Like, he raped teenage girls. He raped women in their 70s. Like, whatever. Yeah, he was vicious. He was brutal. He was probably, in my mind, him and, like, somebody you'd have to go over to. Well, I don't know, because even, like, if I go over and I name someone from Russia, like that Andrei Chikatilo.
Chikatilo, yeah.
Yeah.
But he specialized in what? Children, though, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, so he had, like, a time. I mean, he followed train tracks, and he got them around train tracks and stuff like that. And what, didn't he cut out their eyes? There was something with the eyes. Like, I think
you're right. Yeah, because we actually, you know, we did a podcast, I believe, on Chikatilo, And he was a very deranged individual. But like you said, he was more specific, more victim specific, you know, versus, you know, a Ramirez. You know, it's you mentioned Satan's little GPS. Can you imagine rerouting?
Right.
Turn around. There's your fucking victim.
Right. Praise me.
All right, man. There's a lot of new horror movies that some have already come out this year. This seems to be a big year for horror movies. Do you agree?
There seems to be a fair amount, yeah.
I mean, it seems to be more than, you know, the past few years anyway.
Yeah, I agree with that, definitely.
Are there any that you have seen, new ones that have come out this year, or ones that maybe you're looking forward to, ones that you are not? Give us a little of Dom's perspective of the new movies coming out this year.
God, Dom's drawing a blank, too. I just saw they're going to remake something, and I just thought it was unnecessary. I can't remember what, but I did like the remake of Child's Play. I did like the way it was. They kind of updated it, like Chucky is my Alexa now instead of being a voodoo, you know, someone who used voodoo to get inside of a doll and having a soul trap inside of him. He's artificial intelligence, which had all the safety features removed, which is something that could actually, I believe, is way more possible of happening in our future timeline. Like, you know, I think we might all be heading there for the day that the robots rule over all of us.
I get you know that, but you know, that was the one thing I didn't like, because, you know, I wasn't really big into, you know, the Chucky movies. I wasn't like, oh God, there's a killer doll running around, I have to go see this movie. But what intrigued me was the fact of, as we were just talking, a serial killer's, you know, soul encompasses this doll, and the doll becomes the serial killer. I like that premise. Now, when they done away with it, I was like, oh, and then, you know, come on. All right, I'll let you continue. What'd you think about the doll's look?
It's, yeah, I mean, I prefer the original. Yeah, I can't. But, I mean, it is what it is, I guess. But, yeah, if I had a choice, I would definitely go with the original Chucky over the remake doll version of it. But, I mean, I guess they had to do whatever they had to do to make this work. I thought Mark Hamill did a real good voiceover for him, though.
I do too. Yes, a lot of people don't realize he's a very successful voice actor.
Yeah,
he's done quite a bit in the he did the Joker in some of the Batman cartoons.
Yep,
he was great.
So he's a very accomplished voice actor. Now, before we move on to any other movie, I mean, go ahead and finish your you know, talk about Chucky, but you have to give us a grade. We like to give grades on movies here in the Insane Asylum, so you have to give us, you know, an A, B, C kind of, you know, grade for the Chucky whenever you're done talking about it.
All right, yeah. I mean, there were things, like I said, that I enjoyed that in the updated version of it, the way they did. I liked the way the guy, well, I'm not going to give away spoilers, but with the guy when we talked about how the safety features were removed and all that, I liked the whole little backstory there on why he did it and what happened.
Factory worker.
Yeah, I enjoyed that aspect. I enjoyed the fact that there was like a little homage to Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 in there. Like, I truly enjoyed seeing that in the film, and I liked the way that like Chucky was kind of looking at the movie and seeing all this violence, and then looking over at Andy and his friends, and they're like laughing, like it's hysterical, like guys being beaten with a hammer. That is so funny. Like, naturally, that wouldn't work, you know, to a artificial intelligence wouldn't understand that the way a human being did. So I found there were elements of the film that I truly enjoyed. Overall, to give it a rating, C is an average. I feel like it deserves a little bit better than that. Maybe like a B-minus I would give it. It's definitely not an A movie. Right. By any accounts, like, I mean, my if I give something an A, it's going to be great. You know what I will give an A real quick, too?
Yeah.
Before I lose my train of thought. Oh, my God, I'm drawing a blank on the name. I just saw this movie. It was a sci-fi horror that came out recently. It at first, someone told me about it. They were like, oh, look, this is like if Superman was a bad guy. And it's about, like, this little kid who's, like, got these superhero powers, and he's going to destroy the world. He's just, his parents found him. He was in a UFO crash, and there was a baby inside. It was almost a Superman story.
Right. But I remember seeing the previews.
This was like bad Superman. And I'm so mad. I know everyone listening will know the name of it. So, but like that, I'm going to get you the name of it. I give that an A. Like, I enjoyed that movie. I thought that movie was so good, and I was real happy because it didn't have your typical bullshit Hollywood happy ending that all movies seem to get. And, right. And that's, with modern horror films, that's the one thing that, like, bothers me is I know the ending as soon as, like, the opening credits start. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. I know in the end, something's going to work out. It always works out now. It's something good. There's never a movie anymore. Well, not never. There very rarely is a movie where it's like, no, everybody's dead. This didn't work out. This didn't go. You're going to leave with the feeling of like, wow, like it didn't work out for anybody. They all died. Like that sucked. Like it leaves you with a different feeling. Like that's how movies used to, you know, that was part of art, was the feeling like when they were real horror films were made. Well, actually, I like to use that, but real horror films are also modern independent films as well. It's the big studios that I kind of seem to have this happy ending. I always call it the happy ending. But like when a lot of times I think of like when you go back to like what was happening in the 70s. And into the 80s before like everything became controlled by like three companies, it was like you made a horror film to leave people with an impression of horror. Like you walked out of the horror, like people ran out in 1974 or whatever, people were running out of the theater of The Exorcist.
Yes.
Like they weren't getting to the end of the movie. Like that's a horror film. Like you can't do that today. No, they don't. Or if you do, you have to do it on a small level. And then there's a chance that no one ever gets to see your film. But if you want to, you know, make a big movie, they all seem to have what I call the happy ending.
Yeah, you know, there seems to be that running SOP that there has to be, you know, the courageous female heroine that, you know, survives, like in Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Yeah, the girl in mm-hmm. the back of the truck, Jody, kind of gave me that brow. She wrinkled her brow like, which one? The Jamie Lee Curtis's of you know, the slasher films and the Friday the 13th. There always seems to be a carryover, you know, character. Not everyone should die in a horror movie. You know, let's not leave it, you know, open-ended all the time.
Like look at the original, like take a movie like Last House on the Left, Wes Craven's mm-hmm. First film or whatever. By the time that movie was over, like you knew there wasn't going to be a sequel.
Yeah.
And right, you know, right. Like that's a powerful movie.
I think because of, sorry to cut you off, brother, but because of the fact that you knew that there wasn't going to be a sequel.
Right.
You knew that the story was pretty much over at the end of the movie. I think that is what brings that powerful feeling. You know, like this was a good, disturbing horror movie.
And that's exactly what happened to me when watching it, because I had watched the remake of the movie before I had actually watched the original. And in the remake, the girl doesn't die.
Right.
And then I watched the original, and I'm like, what the hell? Like,
right. The original right. was like, wow. so much better, you know, probably because of the fact that, yes, I mean, you knew at the end that there wasn't going to be, you know, but they had to have that heroine, you know, not the H, not that.
Right.
they had to have that female, you know, survivor, that hero, you know. Do you think that that came out? You remember when Siskel and Ebert were really bashing on horror films back in the 80s when the slashers were really taking off, and they tried to say that it was, just beating down on the women and blah, 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 and it was all sexual. And you think that some of that, you know, always having that female, I mean, what's your thoughts on that? Because I think that is absolutely hilarious.
Well, I mean, a lot of art is always inspired by real life. So sure. when you look at the basis of a lot of horror films, I mean, they're not based on all fact, but like a lot of these people were inspired by things that happened. So unfortunately, as we look over time, at males pretty much doing horrible things to women happens way more often than vice versa, although vice versa right. does happen.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, it just seems logical, you know, that in the movie sense that you would kind of see that same thing going. But as for what Siskel and Ebert were doing, you know, that was part of their agenda, I guess. I don't know. I never enjoyed them two guys. I did watch them when I was young. I think we all did, but like, they trashed one of my favorite movies. I think Ebert or whatever called it like the worst piece of trash ever made or something, but like Maniac from like 1984.
That is right. a great movie.
Yes, that's a horror film. Like yes. that's a disturbing horror film. It's a movie about a serial killer. The ending is totally like you get an experience in what's going through the dude's head, because you're like, at the ending, you're like, what's happening? Why this doesn't make sense. And then you're like, oh, that's all in his head. Like, oh my God, this dude was nuts. Like,
yeah
the remake maybe, wasn't bad, but like,
I haven't seen the remake. We have watched the original. Well, I think Jody's watched it all the way through. I think I've seen most of it, and I always watch this shit at night and then fall asleep.
Mm-hmm. But, well, you've proven that it really doesn't matter what time of the day it is.
You know what, Jody? Shut your dirty mouth.
But that's another example. I mean, we could go down a list of movies that like they remade where there was no sense to remake it because the remake was just shit and the original was great. Or we can dabble and vice versa, where the remake was better. Like, I will say that the remake of The Hills Have Eyes is far superior to the original. Like, I enjoyed it way more. Like, I liked, you know, what Craven did back there in the original. I liked the story and all that. But, like, I mean, if I didn't see it when I was young and I sat down and tried to watch it today, I think it would be hard for me to get the whole way through it, because it's kind of bad. It's cheesy. It's hard to watch at times. It's just done bad. But the remake is like, oh wow, okay, this is real good. Like, you took the original idea and the premise and you actually made it enjoyable. You made it good. That might be the other. Go ahead.
Yeah, I like the remake a lot better than I do the original.
Go ahead. That's just the only one, though. Like, I just want to say that's the only one I think I can name. But yeah, if you have more, go ahead and talk.
I'm trying to think, because I've seen so many remakes, and then I've seen the original later. Like, though, I have to say the latest one that kind of went along both ways was I Spit on Your Grave.
I had a hard time. I saw them both. The original, like, was real harder for me to get through, I thought.
Yeah.
Like, when they were, like, the whole group of them were sodomizing her on that rock. and they were just like showing blood running down her legs and stuff. I was like, oh my God, what is this movie? Why am I watching this poor hillbillies chasing a girl around for an hour, repeatedly raping her? Like, it is so hard to sit through that one because like the rape scenes are long. I think that's what it is. The rape scenes, like in the remake, you know there's rape and everything, but like it doesn't seem like they're as drawn out as that original one.
Right.
And I think that it's like after I watched it, I was like, I'm never watching this movie again. In fact, I don't even know why I watched the remake because after I watched the original, I was like, I was mad. I was disappointed. I was like 14, 15 when I rented that movie. And I didn't know what it was about. I just saw the cover, like the girl got a knife and she's got some blood on her legs. And like, you can see like her ass cheeks. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be like some hot chick, like killing people. Cool. Like I rented it 14, 15. And I watched this girl get raped, repeatedly chased down and beaten and raped. And I'm like, oh my God, I got to shut this movie off. But I'm like, I have to get to the end. That was like an endurance film. I mean, there are ones that I would call endurance films, and I would put the original I Spit on Your Grave as an endurance film.
I agree, man.
Yeah. It's a bad film.
Yeah, by the time you're at the end of that movie, like, you're exhausted. It's like, have you guys seen Cannibal Holocaust?
Yeah.
From 1982?
Yeah, and here's the thing. I think Jody started watching it and said it was stupid.
I couldn't get into it.
Oh, I love it. It's kind of like the first where it's like a found footage film. It's like, that was, in my opinion, I think that might be the first where it's done as found footage. And the idea, they remade it, and they called it Green Inferno. I guess that was supposed to be the original name of it, was the Green Inferno.
How did they go from Green Inferno to Cannibal Holocaust?
Well, I think they were thinking that people were going to have a problem understanding in 1982 why they were calling it the Green Inferno. I don't know. It has so many different names in so many different countries. How about the director was put on trial in Italy for that film?
I heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah, he was charged with murder because when the film came out, he paid the actors in it extra to not do anything. Like, here, go disappear for like 6 months. Don't show up anywhere. Don't do anything. Take a nice vacation. Blah blah blah. And everybody thought that what they were watching was real.
Right. And the government thought he was actually killing people in the movie.
Yeah, they couldn't figure out there was a scene where it showed one of the local women impaled, and it comes up between her legs and it's coming out of her mouth like a big, big pole that she's impaled on, and she's just there dead. I think they said she was accused of adultery or something. And like, they couldn't figure out how they did that special effect. And that was another, they were accusing them of murder of the cast, murder of the indigenous people down there. That movie is hard to sit through. Like, there's real animal deaths that are like that. That was something that was kind of happening in that time frame where a lot of the Mondo films were coming out in the late 60s, early 70s, where they wanted to try to put this real violence. And then you got like the fake death films like Faces of Death,
Faces
79.
Of death.
Yeah. Stuff like that, where they would put like this stuff in of animals being killed and stuff just to add
like
that
brains.
Element of gore. Right. But, the other parts of the movie, though, when you break them down, like, I mean, they gang rape one of the tribal girls, and then they put all the villagers in their hut and they commit a genocide. They burn them all to death. They burn the whole village and everybody in it. Like, the crimes committed by them people in the film, that film is hard to get through. That was a powerful film when I was young. The Human Centipede 2, the second one. Oh my God, that's an endurance film. Make it to the end of that.
I haven't even made it to want to watch the first one, to be honest with you.
You should watch the first one. You should absolutely watch the first one. Listen, the idea, I get it, because that was my whole thing. I didn't watch it for a long time because I heard what it was, and I'm like, this sounds real stupid, but I'm going to make it sound real cool for you, and you're going to want to check it out, okay?
Yeah, all right.
This crazy Nazi bastard who was experimenting on animals wanted to experiment on human beings, and what the human centipede, the first one is a modern mad scientist story. It is a you got to think of the classic Universal and Hammer films with mad scientists doing crazy stuff.
Frankenstein type shit.
Right.
Well, that's but not the building a human, but the mad scientist, you know, type
shit. Right. This is what the original Human Centipede is, and it's done real good because he's a doctor. It's real clean. It's not messy. It's not like all the gore and grossness that you're expecting. It's actually, it's kind of like at times like the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre, where it's more psychological. It's right. You know what happened. You don't necessarily see it. It's not as bad. There's no blood or anything. Like, it's psychological, and it's hard to watch. Like, dude, you should check out the first one. The second one, this one might get me some hate from the listeners. I don't know, but...
You have no idea how much hate I've built up.
Nice. I think the second one is one of the greatest modern-day horror films because it is vile. It is disgusting. It is everything you thought the first Human Centipede was going to be. First off, it's in black and white, and I love black and white, so it won me over with the black and white. This second one is the story of like this loser kind of guy who's like I think he's a parking lot attendant. He's some kind of guard at like a parking lot or something. He lives with his mother. He's a sick pervert. He's just a filthy fucking pervert. And the first movie turned him on. And what he wants to do is make his own centipede. Except he's not a doctor. He's a $7 an hour guard at the parking lot, and he doesn't have medical tools. He's got staple guns and duct tape and everything you think you're going to see in the first one that you don't when you hear what the movie's about is in the second one. And the second one is, dude, it is so good because it is not like we were talking earlier. There is no happy ending in both of these. There is no happy ending. This one is just like it's an endurance film, but it's great because it's like a serial killer. He's a psychopath, and like he can't do it right, and people are getting infections and stuff because he doesn't know what he's doing, and people in the middle of it are dying and dead. It's like, oh, it's awful. The third one sucked. You like that transition? Part three sucked.
I do. I dig that. Yeah, I mean...
Here's how I give them. A minus for the first one, A for the second one, and D for part three.
Damn. D for damn.
Mm-hmm. I shut it off and turned it on three times to get through it. Not because it was like vile or disgusting, but because it was just boring and unwatchable, and it seemed like almost like it'd become a parody of itself. Like,
right?
It was like, no, you should have just stopped after the second one. Like the way I just raved about how great I thought them first two were, and it was a movie I didn't watch for several years simply because I heard what it was,
right?
And I was like, I just dismissed it. Like, it wasn't sold to me as a mad scientist film, and then sold to me as this sick, depraved second sequel that was just way more disturbing.
It's awesome. Well, there you go, Night of the Living Dreadheads.
Right.
get you some Human Centipede. There's a lot of people. I've seen a lot of people that actually do, talk highly of at least the first two. I haven't really heard anything. I think, Dom, you're the first one who, you know, I've heard anything about, you know, the third one being, you know, shit, all pun intended, I guess.
Right.
But the first two, I have heard a lot about that.
How about what was your thoughts on how about the Evil Dead remake? How many years ago was that? About 5-6 years ago?
Yeah, yeah. I think we actually owned that remake. Yeah. I think it wasn't bad. I think actually, Mrs. Dredge, you liked it actually. What? Yeah, I mean, you thought it was no. I'm sorry.
You're thinking of a completely different
movie.
I'm
thinking of Day of the or Dawn. Is it? Well, I'm looking right at it. Dawn of the Dead remake. We have. Okay.
That was real good.
Evil Dead.
That
we just watched it the other night.
Yeah, we just watched the original Evil Dead. Evil Dead 2.
I don't think we watched the remake.
Yeah, actually, I don't, because I was thinking of a completely different movie. I don't even know if I've seen the remake of Evil Dead.
You should, then, because the Evil Dead, first off, don't think of it as a remake. Think of it as just like a standalone telling of the story, like the same premise, the same idea, but it's like the other ones don't exist. You know what I mean? Like,
okay,
if you watch
you.
It like
right.
that. It's done real good. I enjoy it. I like a lot of the stuff that they did in the movie, like as it being a standalone kind of movie. I heard talk that they were going to do a remake. I don't know if they're talking about doing a sequel to this or a remake of Evil Dead 2, but I heard that they had something in plan like that. The original that you guys just watched is an A++ in my book, right?
That movie's hilarious.
Absolutely. I think all of them are. And actually, I think Evil Dead 2 is better than the first one,
opinion. I liked that one better for the longest time. And then about, I don't know, a year or two ago, I went back. And because Evil Dead 2 was always my go-to. Like, if someone wanted to watch something, did you see Evil Dead 2? Like, boom, that was it. But then, like, a couple years back, I revisited the first one because I'd watched part two so much. I revisited the first one, and I'm like, you know what? Like, this first one, I don't know why when I talk about the greatest horror films of all time, like, I need to move it up higher on the list. Like, it needs to be mentioned with Texas Chainsaw Massacre and The Exorcist and Night of the Living Dead. Like, I think it's that good, especially on the budget it's made with and the atmosphere it creates for its time. What was that, 1981, I think?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, very early '80s, yeah.
It's just, it's amazing film. The second one is of course, I mean, that's the cult classic, right? Like I said, for the longest time, it was my go-to. There's so much more to enjoy in it because there's so much more happening because they had more money and they could do more.
They had all the really cool, you know, camera tricks, you know, the real fast
right.
moving through the woods, all those little things that, you know, were I think maybe stood alone on their own. I mean, there was a lot of, you know, that was a camera type style that you didn't see a whole lot of in, you know, the horror genre, in any genre, really, I think. I mean, they were pretty much at the forefront.
Yeah, I love that. I think what they did there, they created that whole, like, you got the idea, like, something's coming. And
right.
you see them, and they're running, and they're looking. And you never see what's chasing them.
No.
Like, you don't know what it is. And I think it even makes it creepier. Like, they see it. And you see it from its perspective, but you never actually see what it is. That is it a feeling? Are they sensing something? Are they actually seeing something? Like, it's, I love what they did there with the camera work. I love
absolutely
the way in part two, like you were saying, the way it can follow, like they're chasing them through the cabin and stuff, and he's slamming the doors, and the doors are blasting back open, and like, it's great. What's real great is, like, you can see, if you watch the top of the screen, you can see, like, there's no roof. Like, they're on a set. I don't know if you ever noticed that, but
I did not. No, that's interesting.
No. Yeah, next time you go back and you see that again, like, and they're running through the house like that or through the cabin, yeah, well, pay attention to the top of the screen and you'll start to notice. It's like, oh, yeah, they're on a set. I can see where the wall stops and there's nothing else.
Yeah, and then, it's funny because I do that with movies. I'll look for little inconsistencies and, you know, little things that shouldn't have happened but did that maybe not a lot of people notice.
I'm trying to think of what the name was. I think it was In the Woods, or I want to say Into the Woods or In the Woods.
In the Woods, yes. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
It's the original, I guess you could say, it's the original Evil Dead story. It's from, I think, 1978. It's a 30-minute short film. A lot of people don't know about it. You can look it up on YouTube. Some places list it as, what are they, like Evil Dead Zero or something like that.
I have seen that. Yeah, I've seen that floating around. Yes.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Actually, I think you tagged me in that, and I did watch that. It was the real that did have Bruce Campbell in it.
Yeah, Bruce Campbell this time, and this one, Bruce Campbell's the one who gets possessed and is the one doing all the horrible stuff instead of being like the hero, like in all the other movies. It's so interesting to see it. It's a VHS, it's somebody's like fourth or fifth generation VHS uploaded. Yeah. And there's tracking errors in it and stuff. I would love, I'm sure like Sam Raimi's got a sweet print of it himself somewhere. I would love for him to like maybe do some kind of digital remaster and put this out with some kind of special edition. People should see it. Like it's, I mean, they did it for like $15,000, like no money. Right. But you get into kind of the idea of what's really happening, I guess, in Evil Dead, because you find out what in this one, like Ash finds a Native American like artifact, like he digs up like a dagger instead or something, and he finds out everything's like they're on an Indian burial ground, and these are angry Native American spirits, and it's completely different than the whole Necronomicon and the demons and stuff. So it's definitely shows the idea of Evil Dead. And I guess he made it to kind of use it as like a promo film. Like I guess he wanted to shoot this to try to drum up money to make Evil Dead. And it must have been successful. I heard a couple of like small movie theaters somewhere showed it like back then. So there's films, prints of it. What's amazing is like in all my tape trading back in the days in the 80s and 90s, like I've never heard of this. I didn't hear about this until, I don't know, 2 or 3 years ago. I never even knew this thing existed.
No, that it is. I did watch it. I remember you had posted it around on the interwebs. And yeah, I did check it out. And I don't think I replied because you asked me to give you my thoughts on it. And yes, it was, you know, you could tell, like you said, fourth, fifth generation, you know, VHS recording of a recording of a recording. So there was tracking issues. It was a little dark and grainy at times, but you get the point. You're like, okay, this, when you first start watching it, it's like, this is the beginning of the Evil Dead.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
No, yeah, I mean that was basically. I mean, you know, this is where it pretty much started, and then the evil dead that we all know and love later on. That's what everybody thinks is the beginning, but no, you watch this, you know, as you mentioned, yes, I think the link that you sent and put out there, it says Evil Dead Zero. I mean, so it's literally the first. The foundation of the Evil Dead, the movies, and then of course Ash versus the Evil Dead and so on.
Which I enjoyed that movie, Part 3, that's the version I prefer, the uncut version where it's just Bruce Campbell, I think it actually says, if I go check, I think it's Bruce Campbell versus the Evil Dead. It doesn't even say Ash on it. I have a DVD of it where the ending isn't the same ending. It's like he gets teleported into the future, and I think the whole world was destroyed in a nuclear war. That's the ending. It's real grim. It's he's in a fucking cave and he comes out and the whole planet's done. Yeah. So I like that one, but at times it's cheesy, because of the time it was made and the special effects that were available. And then you did have Sam Raimi and them, they like to put that little kind of cheesiness in it with the skeleton saying trying to little catchphrases, you know what I mean? stuff like that. It's intended to have that kind of silly touch to it. But I do like it. I liked it because in which one is it? Is it part two when they're looking through the book? And I can't remember. Or it might be in the original, actually. I'm not sure because, to me, part two is pretty much a loose remake of the original, right? Where right. when part two... Yeah. Part two is acting like the first one didn't happen, because obviously, dude wouldn't go back to the same cabin.
you would think.
Right? So the second one is pretty much a loose remake of the first. So in one of them, or maybe even both of them, but Ash looks through the book, and there's a page where it shows, you could tell it's set in medieval times, and it's Ash with his shotgun hand raised up in the air and stuff drawn into the book. I thought that was real cool. And that was something I saw after I'd watched Army of Darkness and came back and visited, Evil Dead again before that. I was oh, look, there's that part. Nice. So there is that intent. When he made that, whether it was Evil Dead 2 that the scene was in, but he already had this planned out on where it was, how far he was going with it, where this was going to, you know what I mean?
Right.
It shows you right there in Evil Dead 2. I think if Raimi and them could do a remake of that, with today's technology and stuff and done right, I think that would be awesome.
I agree.
Because Yeah, the whole skeleton army in the medieval times. That's just cool stuff, I think.
Well, you're in the right place, my friend. Hey, I want to switch gears a little bit. I want to talk a little paranormal. I would like to, as I mentioned, I talked about our experience at Hillview, but... now that we have you here in the insane asylum, I would like to hear, your thoughts. You were in different places at times. We had a pretty decent group. We split up. We're looking at different different areas of the building because it's a pretty big building. So we thought, hey, we'll split up. So you caught some things. I caught some. I don't know if I have. I haven't looked through all of my video, the still shots. Real quick though, before we get into all that, I think that we should kind of preface this conversation. And I'm going to revisit a clip that I did play on another podcast talking about this. And, same podcast, another episode. and it is, do you want to set it up? Because you were the one that was, recording it. I believe it was you and your dad that were in this. I believe you said it was a cafeteria. I couldn't remember at the time that I did the podcast where exactly you were. But you heard some things, you caught some things on your digital recorder. Why don't you set it up, and then we'll play this little clip and let people decide for themselves. So set this just that. Let me try and get that out again.
Sure.
Set this little clip up for us, brother.
All right. So we get to Hillview Manor that night, and this is actually early in the investigation. Like, you guys were, you had ordered food and were waiting for food to show up, and Blaine and Hess were still on their way.
Mm-hmm.
So you were outside or down on the first floor or something, and we're up on the second floor. It was me and my father. His name's Vince. We were up on the second floor, and we were just kind of like, it was early in the night. We were just kind of walking around getting a feel for the place. I had a spirit box, and I was running the spirit box, and I wasn't getting anything. Nothing was coming through. And while it was running, like, not coming through the spirit box, but I could hear like a music. I'm a musician, so any kind of like little melody or anything like that, like my ears, just any other musician will tell you, like, I mean,
right,
it can be real quiet. If there's some kind of melody there, it's just natural instinct. Like, we hear it no matter how bad our
hearing is. The musician's ear. Yeah.
Right. Like, I can't hear the person talking to me, but like the radio playing in the next room, I know what song's on. Like, I can't explain it, but so I'm hearing like this music, and I turn the spirit box off, and like, I don't hear anything, but it's not coming through the spirit box. And I turn the spirit box back on, and I'm running it, and I'm asking questions, and I'm not getting any responses. And I hear the music start again, and I turn it off, and I look over at Vince, and I say, "Hey, do you hear anything?" And he's like, "No, why?" And I'm like, "I hear like," and I pause, and I'm trying to think of a way to describe what I'm hearing. And I say, an ice cream truck, because that's, I couldn't pinpoint the type of sound that I was looking for. And in retrospect now, what I'm able to say is what I was hearing was like the type of musical jewelry box that someone would open.
Right.
And you hear like the tingling kind of twinkling sound kind of thing happening. And he's like, "No." And I was like, "All right." And we just go about, and I sent you a short clip. It's actually from the video, from the camera. And when I watch this back, I say, I hear like, and I pause, and there's a scream, like something screams right into the microphone. And then I'm like an ice cream truck. Or I said, it sounds like, and I pause, and there's a scream, and I said, it's like an ice cream truck. And it's, I can't explain what that is, but I can tell you that the only people in the building at that point, we were on the second floor in the cafeteria, was me and Vince. And it is a, I mean, I would say it's a feminine scream. It doesn't, it's not a manly kind of like yell kind of thing. It's like a high pitched scream, like something was standing in my face screaming at me. And the only thing that heard it was the microphone on my camera. And I have, as a skeptic, I have no explanation for what that is, because that's something I found 2 days later reviewing video.
Interesting. And then there was also, you know, the little potty mouth. You hear a female's voice say, "Fuck."
Yeah, that was that was off the voice recorder. Me and Blaine were in, we were down in the like basement area where, I don't know if you remember the stories. They said, the guy, I guess he was out drinking or something, and they were trying to hide him because they didn't want him to get in trouble because he was drunk, and he like froze to death or something, like at the bottom of these steps, or he fell down the steps. I can't remember what it was. He might've been drunk and fell down him and froze or something. There was something to it.
Yes.
And we were doing, I was doing an EVP session in there, and the only people in the room were me and Blaine. And he didn't say a single word, and I was asking questions. And on playback, yeah, as clear as day, there's an F-bomb being thrown in there. It's a whisper. It's not like the video clip. Like, if I had to grade them, I like the whisper. I mean, you can hear it as plain as day. It's real loud, but it's a whisper.
Yeah.
I would say it would be like a, maybe like a C-plus kind of EVP. But that video clip is like A plus. Like, that's like a voice. That's not a whisper. That sounds like a human vocal cords and stuff. It's not, It's for being what it is and for what I know it to be, like I not hearing it while I was there, it's a pretty convincing piece of evidence for me as a skeptic that there is something. I don't know if ghost is the correct explanation. It could be some type of higher dimension, like an alternate dimension that can see us that we can't really interact with. I don't know. But like those two things that we just talked about right here, as a skeptic, I have no explanation for how voices of people who weren't present can appear on recordings. And yeah. When we talk about it like that, like from a scientific standpoint, like I said, I can't say it's ghost. I can't say it's this. I can't, but I can say that there is something to this, and that this type of investigation kind of stuff, even though, like, I mean, we were there. That's, I think, all I got. I still have more stuff to review. I just haven't, I have to get a proper laptop to convert this off of my camera. It's pretty much what it comes down to.
Right.
So I can go through it and have good audio and be able to increase audio and hear what's happening in the silent parts and all that. But without having gone through all of everything in depth, like you would after you do your post investigation stuff, just kind of grazing over stuff, like that's two really good pieces of evidence that I can't explain.
Yeah, and it's actually probably the two most intriguing and compelling pieces of evidence that we got the entire 8 hours or so that we were there. It's not like, you know, I don't know how many people go ghost hunting or visit these places. It is nothing like TV. There's not something happening every 5-10 minutes, you know. I mean, that there's a lot of just sitting there in the dark and waiting and you know, to be honest, even though I love doing, you know, and going to these, you know, places, it's actually a very boring activity. If you really think about it, because there is a lot of just sitting. I mean, there's not, you're not doing a whole lot. Now, you know, for people like us, you know, I mean, it's not boring to just sit there and, you know, take everything in and with hopes of, you know, catching something, you know, some abnormality or something that we can't explain. That's the whole excitement. That's what makes it not boring for us. But I think for most people, you know, that maybe don't get into it like we do, that, you know, it's probably, you know, a boring, you know, type thing. It's not like you see on TV where, you know, like I said, there's something happening all the time. And, you know, there's just, you know, there's spooky shit and spooky. You know, I mean, it just doesn't happen like that. So, let's play this clip right now. You set it up very well. Let's play this clip and let's let the listeners take and have a listen once again to this very, very strange little recording. And when we get back, we'll talk more about that. So there you have it. You could plainly hear a fuck in that, and I think everybody could hear what you were talking about, Dom, right before you mentioned ice cream truck, when you were trying to figure out what kind of music it was.
Yeah, that scream is so prominent that the fuck is prominent and clear.
That's what she said.
I can't explain it, and to go with you, what you were talking about earlier, it is something where you have to have a genuine interest in this, because it is a lot of nothing. We were there for 8 hours, and like I left there kind of disappointed. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. I've seen, you know, you see places investigated on TV. People make YouTube videos. They do all this stuff, and yeah, you know what? When you think about it, it's like, oh, well, their YouTube video is like 20 minutes, or their TV show maybe has like 45 minutes of programming, and like. The actual ghost hunting footage in those shows is usually very, very small because a lot of it is nothing happening. I ran that spirit box, and that's a device that I am a skeptic of, but I want to try out I want to try these kind of things out. I want to see if I get these kind of results. I want to see if I can have what I consider to be a, not necessarily a conversation, but something where I can ask, some questions and the same voice comes through and has answers that are relative to the question I asked.
Yes.
Is something I need to see with a spirit box where we don't get a lot of that, although I have seen examples where people are running spirit boxes and they do get like a complete sentence that goes over, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 radio stations. That isn't possible. But when I ran that spirit box that whole night, the different sessions I did, I didn't get one voice at all. And maybe that's a validation too, that maybe those things are, when they do come through, that they are authentic. Because, I mean, I ran them and ran them and ran them, and nothing was happening. And I did EVP sessions, and there was no responses. And like you said, it's kind of a long, kind of drawn-out night that at the end, if it wasn't for those two pieces that we just listened to, like, I would have came out of there and been like, I'm not sure there's ghosts in there, because I didn't feel... I didn't feel anything like, you know, sense wise, like I didn't feel any like thing that gave me like chills or goosebumps or felt something, like just felt something. And I didn't hear anything with my ears. I didn't hear a disembodied voice. I didn't see an apparition with my eyes. I didn't see like an object move you know what I mean? There was a lot that doesn't happen. That sometimes you see in things, and like, I don't know, a lot of times if the things we see in these types of things are real, because like, if I have a deadline and I have a TV show and people are paying me and they want me to produce something, you know what I mean? At the end of the night, you can't go somewhere and spend money traveling to here and traveling to there. And you're here for 4 days and you're there for 4 days and you're spending the expense account and you're doing this and that, and now you have nothing. Like, you have to have something.
I get it. Yeah.
And one of the things that bothers me is because of that, a lot of places are, I think maybe, I don't know if there's such a demand for people, if there are that many people doing this, like constantly, but that places are booking like constantly, daily, every, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't think Hillview Manor is booked like 5-6 days a week. I can't believe they get that much booking, but these places, because of TV shows, and I'm not putting down Hillview. I enjoyed my night there. Like, at the end of the day, it was absolutely worth it.
It was a very cool experience. Absolutely.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly. If for nothing else, we all got together. We all had a good time. We all got to go and hear stories of a poorhouse in Pennsylvania, how things were operated. We got to walk through the place. You know, it was, and that aspect is real cool. Like, as a historical thing, like, I'm not disappointed at all in the experience. If I walked out of there feeling like nothing paranormal had happened. But I feel at times like, because I've contacted some other places, I've looked into doing this, you know, for us to go here, to go there and whatever. And a lot of these places charge a lot of money for what turns out to be about 6 hours.
Exactly. And then that kind of, you know, brings up a question that Mrs. Dreads brought up when we talked about, our ghost real on that podcast. And that being, and this is not saying, because like you said, we had an absolutely great time at Hillview to experience the stories, the place. There was so much history and so many things that happened in the confines of these walls that we were at that time standing inside of. So, you know, that was the experience, and that's what I really took away from it. Because, like you said, there wasn't a whole lot of activity that we captured other than the clip that we just played. But do you think possibly, and again, this is not shitting on Hillview or any other place that offers overnight investigations or tours or things of that nature. I think it's within the realm of possibility that there could be some fucking con artists out there that are playing, because as you mentioned, these TV shows, you have Ghost Adventures, Ghost Hunting, you have all these different ghost hunting TV shows that are really catching a lot of fire, you know what I'm saying? I mean, they're becoming very popular over, I'd say, maybe even the past 10 years. You've just seen an explosion of them, and even further back than 10, that maybe some of these places are possibly playing on and placating, people's belief system, that they believe that ghosts are real. They see it on TV. Zach can't be wrong. Look at his hair. He can't be wrong.
There's definitely some of that happening. Not naming any place specific.
Just in general, I think it's very much in the realm of possibility that people are really, they're making a profit off of something that I think even them themselves maybe can't prove.
Yeah, they definitely are. The interest into this type of field, the paranormal study, is something that has grown, and part of it is because of these shows. Part of it is, like, some of these shows have given people ideas on what type of equipment you could use to do these types of investigations and stuff like that. Other people have had, like, the thing that interested me in this were life experiences and stuff. So you do have people who will see an opportunity to make a dollar, like we mentioned, like you talked about earlier in the podcast, where that young chick married Charlie because she wanted to get Charlie's body, because she was like, there's going to be money at the end of this road. Like, so not necessarily saying like places, and naturally places, I think, like Hillview and like your old, like your penitentiaries and your psychiatric hospitals that have closed down the tuberculosis hospital out there in Kentucky or whatever.
Waverly Hills.
Yes. A lot of them have had a lot of death. There's no doubt. And I'm sure that places like that have more of this type of activity, which it could be ghost related. Cause like I said, I don't know, would put those voices on those recordings we heard earlier. I don't have an explanation for it. So the possibility that it is a soul of a human being who no longer is alive, I have to accept that that's a possibility, because sure, I don't have an answer. And so this is a possible explanation. Well, yes, I have to take that credible now because I can't explain those voices. So I'm sure those types of places probably have stuff like that. Your smaller type of places, like, I think people might be buying like residential areas and kind of hyping up that a place might have some stuff going on it that doesn't, so that they can turn around and charge people, you know, $1,000, $1,200, $1,500 to come here for one night in this house. Yeah. And, like, I mean, I get there could be valid explanation. Like, you know what? We need to insure the house because this is what we're doing. And I'm sure insurance could be pricey because if you do bring people in and they destroy your place, you have to be able to replace it and stuff. But there's no way if they're booking this much, you know what I mean, that that price is necessary. And actually, if they were, if a lot of the times if they were people who are genuinely interested in this field as much as we are, you think that they would want to lower prices in order to have more investigations, because what you would want to do is culminate evidence, like the more evidence, like we went to Hillview for what, 6 hours, 7 hours we were in that building.
Yeah.
What if we would have had, what if we would have paid, would we pay like $1,200 or something for that night?
I'm not sure what the price was, but I think you're pretty damn close on that.
Yeah. Like $1,200, $1,400, somewhere in that ballpark. We paid a nice penny. Now, I'm just putting this out there. I wanted to take the kids up on vacation this summer up in the mountains and get myself like a nice place with a hot tub and electric, not like, you know, like a more old time kind of place. Like I wanted my modern everything still, but for that kind of money, for $1,200, I could get a beautiful place up in the mountains of Pennsylvania for an entire week.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like, imagine if we could have had even like three nights for that price. And then what? Then we might have had like maybe seven or eight recordings like the two that we played. And then all of a sudden, right, we have to look at it a little bit differently, more convincingly, because we have more evidence and we have to try to explain how we gathered it, what it came from, what is it, how did, what is this, just like my voice recorder, just like if I let it record and I play it back in the next day, where does it just generate random words? You know what I mean? Is that what my I don't think they do that. I'm pretty sure if I leave my camera on all night, like I watch back the video, it's not going to generate random words. So there's definitely something, and like for that kind of, it's just a lot of money. And I do think that there are places that sensationalize, maybe even have people come in and do investigations and kind of embellish a little bit, or maybe fake some stuff, or however you want to interpret it. Like, I've definitely seen people on YouTube make fake videos, bad videos, terrible videos, and they make a lot of money on YouTube because they have a lot of viewers. I watched this idiot make a video claiming that Slender Man attacked him in the woods instead of a baseball bat. And it was like the fakest shit I've ever seen. But the guy's channel has like, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of subscribers. His videos have hundreds of thousands of viewers. He's making money big time, hand over fist. He's traveling everywhere. And what's he doing? He's faking stuff. Because, like, not every place on this planet is going to give you the kind of results that you see on TV or video. Like, there's very few places, and you get into something where, like, I know people who've told me that they've lived in haunted houses. And, like, they would make jokes about the ghost, you know what I mean? Like, actually, my dad, his house is they feel like it's haunted because like things happen. You get a scent, you smell, like I lived there for 3 months, and one night I was sitting in the living room and like I had to go look in the kitchen, dude, because I smelled the greatest sauce I have ever smelled in my life. Like somebody was cooking sauce, but it was like 2:30 in the morning and nobody was making anything. And I wanted to eat so bad because I could smell this sauce and I'm Italian and it just got me like, you know, like the old Warner Brother cartoons where like they follow the scent, like by their nose, they're on their tiptoes, like ding, 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 running across the hall. And that's me like, oh, this is going to be great. And I'm like, wait, what is this? And I was telling my dad about it. I was like, listen, said, because he didn't tell me anything about, like, how they thought there was, like, a haunting or a presence in the house, I would say, because I wouldn't say haunting. It wasn't, there's nothing, like, there that tries to scare anybody. But I was like, I was sitting in your living room last night, and you guys were sleeping, and I was watching TV, and, like, it smelled like somebody was making the greatest spaghetti sauce I've ever smelled in my life. And he was like, wow, that's weird that you said that, because I smelled that, like, a couple years back or something, he had said. And my stepmother had a relative. It's a family house, so it's been there for generations. And there was a relative who would make, I guess, these big pots of sloppy joes. And everybody loved their sloppy joe. Like, everybody in the neighborhood couldn't wait until this relative made sloppy joes. And I compared it to, like, the smell of a spaghetti sauce. But apparently, once he said sloppy joes, it was like a light went off. Like, wow. I'll tell you what, I don't know. Now that you said sloppy joe, whatever it was, right, I wanted to eat it so bad because it smelled so good. But, like, I was there for 3 months, and I caught that scent for, I don't know, a minute one night randomly. And my dad had caught that scent a few years earlier. Like, stuff doesn't happen a lot of the times. Like, you're not going to get stuff 7 nights in a row.
Right.
So you go to one of these places, like, nothing happens. Does that mean that nothing happens there? No, it meant nothing happened that night. If you go to the place the next day, something happens. Does that mean something happens all the time? No, it just means something happened when you were there.
Exactly.
So it's kind of hard to, you know, kind of nail this down in a way where, I don't know, where it's consistent enough that you can say what it is and what it isn't, and, like, it's indisputable. You know what I mean? Like, we can sit here and people can say it's a ghost, and people can dispute that, because, like, you can't get that intelligent kind of interaction I was talking about earlier. Although some people have done it or shown it, but, like, I question sometimes, until I see it myself, until I experience things myself, I'm skeptical of everything. I need to see it to believe it. But to maybe perhaps change the topic just briefly, here is
Absolutely.
Something that I'm not skeptical of, that I've always was skeptical of. And only in very recent time did I become not skeptical of. And it's perhaps the oldest piece of ghost hunting equipment, the Ouija board.
Interesting.
I don't know if you guys have ever done anything with Ouija boards.
I have.
And what you always, did you think it was authentic, or did you think someone was pushing it?
Well, I mean, it was made by Parker Brothers, so, you know, I was very skeptical. It was about four of us, I think, three or four of us, and, you know, we lit some candles. I think they had to be, like, red candles or something. I don't remember. Certain color candles. We lit some candles, and I asked a question, and this is what got my skeptical views of the Ouija board, got me rethinking my, you know, thoughts on it. Was my great grandfather had, I passed, I think, maybe a few years prior, and he passed away in a hospital, and none of the people that were with me knew that. They knew my grandfather had died. Or my great-grandfather had passed in recent years, but they didn't know where. I didn't talk about it. It wasn't none of their fucking business. I mean, if they'd asked me, I would have told them, but, I mean, it just wasn't something that came up in casual conversation. And so this girl, Lori, who she, you know, I don't know, I can't remember if she, you know, claimed, you know, medium or whatever it was.
Right.
And I asked the question, where did my great-grandfather pass away? Given that nobody knew, whether somebody was pushing it or not, they spelled out hospital, but in a crude way. It wasn't the, you know, way that you spell hospital, I think it had an O instead of an A at the end.
Okay.
Or, yeah. You know, so it was a crude spelling of it, and I kind of got up and said, I think I'm done. Because that kind of freaked me out a little bit, knowing that I knew personally I did not tell anyone where my grandfather had or great grandfather had passed, but yet here is 2-3 people ignorant of that information, and it's spelling out hospital, and I knew myself I was not moving it. I was just barely touching it. I didn't do anything. And so that was very strange. So that was my one instant. Mrs. Dredge, you ever mess with a Ouija board, as kids or anything?
Mm-mm.
No.
No.
Are you chicken?
No.
I think you are.
I'm not chicken.
Bark, bark, bark.
Whatever.
what's been your experience, Dom, with the Ouija, and tell us why. You were skeptical, which is probably pretty, like most people, you think somebody's pushing it or this or that. And what was the instance that caused you to not be a skeptic anymore over it?
We began messing around with Ouija boards. I was like 14, 15. I was a drummer. It was like the first band I had joined, and we were just like, oh, yay, someone had a Ouija board, and we were joking around. They had brought it over to band practice, and it was a Parker Brothers board, just like you said. And we used to play around with it and stuff, but, like, I never took it serious. I always thought somebody was moving the oracle.
Right.
I didn't, like, I don't know. I thought it was just a big joke. I was like, I don't know why we're doing this. This is stupid. And some kids I knew, they lived over in this next town by me. They, the actual priest that paid them, he had seen them, and he offered them money to help him. I guess he was throwing stuff out of this church basement. They had like a dumpster, and they were cleaning out this basement and stuff. And they found a Ouija board in the basement of this church that wasn't a Parker Brothers board. And I knew the one dude, and he was like, because he knew, he was like, oh, Dom loves metal and horror films. He'll love this. Wait till I show him. He was all excited when he found it. Like, oh, I'm going to keep this. I'm going to give this to Dom. He'll like it. And he gave me this Ouija board that he had found in the basement of this church. And I brought it to band practice. Like, hey, look, I got a Ouija board. You guys want to mess with this? And we did the same thing. And it was, I thought this dude was pushing it, like, because I had one friend who was, he was the singer in the band, and it seemed like when people would do it, like, there would come a point where he would start getting, like, agitated. And every time I noticed he got agitated, like, this weird thing started to happen with the Ouija board. The oracle started making the same shape. It started doing what I called figure eights. It was just a figure eight again and again and again all over the board, the figure eight, the figure eight. And I'm like, I started saying, we would ask, like, who's this? Who's here? And everything. And when we got the answer, we used to mock it, the answer. And we used to make jokes and say, the spirit's retarded and all this and that. And we said all this stuff about it, and we taunted it. I mean, like, because I thought, like, my singer, because it kept happening. And it just, like I said, he would get agitated, and this would start to happen. And I was like, all right, Mike's the guy who's moving the oracle, and now he's done because this shit's happening again. That's how I saw it, you know what I mean?
Right.
And the oracle would repeatedly start, after we would do the figure eight, and we'd be like, who is this? It would start going back and forth between two letters, Z and O, Z and O, Z and O, over and over and over and over. And that's why we would start making fun of it. And then a few years ago, because I like paranormal investigation stuff just like you, I watch shows just like you, I watch a Ghost Adventures show.
And they do this whole show about what's called the Zozo demon, the demon of the Ouija board. And, dude, I got goosebumps now telling you this. Because
wow,
this was happening to us when I was 14, 15 years old. This is 1989, 1990. We didn't have the internet. Like, we weren't all hooked up on the internet. And you know what I mean? Like, I don't even know how many houses were even had that option. Like, I didn't know people who had a computer when I was 15.
Hell, so, you had to bring in soup labels to get your fucking schools to even have computers at that point.
Right, right. So none of us had this story of there's a demon of the Ouija board named Zozo. And when you get him, he starts, this is what he does. He makes figure eights. And he starts going back and forth between the letters Z and O. That's how he lets you know he's here. And I'm watching this Ghost Adventure show. And these people are talking about the Zozo demon. And they're talking about these Ouija boards and all this stuff. And I'm like, I lived this in 1990. Like, this is real. Like,
you probably about pooped yourself, didn't you, when you heard
that? I absolutely did, dude. I first thing I did once I saw the TV show was I went and opened up Google and typed in Zozo demon. Because I never once in my life thought about looking this stuff up, because we did it when we were 14, 15 years old and it was done. I ain't messed with a Ouija board since then.
Right.
But, like, when I saw that, I was like, Mike wasn't pushing the Oracle. Like, nobody was pushing the Oracle. Like, that thing was really doing that. We were really mocking and taunting something that responds to people who uses Ouija boards. And it seems to be like the same thing that responding to everybody. Because apparently, if you mess with these Ouija boards long enough, every time you get on it, the only thing on there is the Zozo demon. And it don't, you can have 1,000 people in 1,000 locations on the same Ouija board. They're all going to get the Zozo demon.
Nobody puts Zozo in a corner.
Right. Don't make them mad. But that is something that really opened up my my thought possibility that this thing, this Ouija board stuff, is possibly authentic.
Interesting. Yeah, that's like, that's a pretty interesting story. I've never heard of Zozo or anything like that.
There's people who say that's what Led Zeppelin 4 is really titled.
Instead of Zofo.
No, Zoso with an S.
Yeah, oh, but, yeah, yeah.
But they say the S is inverted because, like, Jimmy Page was all into the occult. He was all into Ouija boards and Aleister Crowley and black magic. Like, he lived in Aleister Crowley's house at one point.
Interesting. There you have it. You heard it right here. Led Zeppelin, devil worshipers.
I mean, bro, Jimmy Page was
Jimmy
definitely
Page,
into the occult. Yeah, yeah, there's no doubt there. I mean, didn't he used to wear like a wizard hat on stage and shit? Like, he was into that shit.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, he bought the house. Aleister Crowley, he performed. I can't remember the name of the actual ritual. I actually, when I was younger and like I studied serial killers, I studied a lot of the occult too as well. I mean, you know, there's no accident that I ended up loving horror films and playing in a black metal band. So, like, it's all there. But the house, Aleister Crowley conducted this ritual, and that lasted, it took 30 days to complete. It was, I think, some kind of, like sex magic ritual with these two women. One of them might have even been Barbara Bush's mother. It might have taken place during this, but the actual ritual itself, they claim it has killed magicians trying to do it, because it's a 30-day long ritual.
Wow.
But that's the house that Jimmy Page was living in when Zeppelin was coming up with all this great music.
Thank you, Satan.
And right. And Aleister Crowley claimed that he didn't write, what was it, the Book of Law or something, the one where he
He said he went into like the pyramid, the Great Pyramid. They gave him access, and he kind of just went and sat inside the pyramid, and he wrote an entire book that he claims was channeled from a higher deity or something, like Thoth or something weird. I forget.
Wow. I'm speechless at this point.
Right. We've gone from paranormal to Ouija boards to Led Zeppelin and Aleister Crowley and the Great Pyramid.
Pyramids, I know. I mean, where do you go from here?
But you know what's fascinating is that they gave him access. When you hear all this stuff about Aleister Crowley and the way he was run out of all these countries and stuff, like, they don't just let anybody go in the Great Pyramid. And I don't know how long he was in there for, long enough to write a book. I don't think that was like an hour-long kind of thing.
Sure. Yeah, that is strange. I mean, not we couldn't just walk in and just go trotting in and just, you know, pop a squat somewhere.
Right. I'll sit in the corner over here. I'm going to write my biography, my autobiography. I'll be here for a few days. Yeah, don't mind me. I'll be here till Thursday.
Yeah. I'll let you know when I'm done. And yeah, I'll need clean sheets in the morning.
All right, please. Where's the bathroom at?
Right. Is there a mini bar in this room?
Do I just sit in the other corner of the pyramids?
Oh man, Dom, this has been one. We could literally, you know, talk for hours. Right.
I know. I was going to say, we've been doing this for, what, about 2 hours now?
I mean, yeah, we could talk for hours, but I love this, you know, different people's perspectives. I mean, I think we had a really good discussion. Hell, you're going to have to come back on the show, you know, a couple times
a month
or something. And
whenever, brother. You just let me know. I'll make myself available.
This has been a really fun podcast to do. You're actually the first guest that we've had that's been on the entire show, and thank you for doing most of the talking.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think I'm just so happy to talk about something other than the normal kind of stuff I would appear on someone's podcast to discuss. I'll just leave it at that. For those who know my history, this could have gone in
a lot of different directions.
Right, but no, this was just great. Like, I would, anytime you guys want to, you know, discuss any topic, I'll make myself available. I'm always happy to come back. I enjoyed this. Thanks for having me on.
Amen. Again, and anytime, man. It was great. We'll definitely have to get together and do a little ghost hunting 2-3. Mrs. Dredds is a little skeptical herself, I believe. I think she's got some skepticism and running through her veins. Would you say that's true, Mrs.
Dredds? Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So we're all kind of skeptics, but hey, we love to hang out, you know, together and go to these places and hopefully prove maybe our skepticism wrong. We played a clip earlier that got us thinking, okay, they can't explain this one. That's what I like to do when the weather gets nice. I like to go hang out with friends and go to creepy places and see if I can catch a fucking ghost.
Good times.
So, all right. I hear the white coats coming down the fucking hall. I think they don't play here in the insane asylum, my friend. Hey, Dom, thanks again for coming and talking with us tonight, man. We will definitely have you on, in the future. Have you be a little regular guest for us. And, because like I said, this could go on for fucking hours.
Yeah, we could have done a 12-hour podcast. I know. People, forget about Human Centipede, too. Here's your endurance. Here's your endurance tape. 12 hours.
Exactly. 12-hour fucking podcast. Yeah, let's see who's got it in them.
Can you get to the end?
Yeah, it's the podcast challenge, the new challenge out there. And, of course, thank you, Mrs. Dress.
You're welcome.
And we will talk to you guys next week. Hopefully, if everything goes okay, we will have another guest next week. Mr. Mike Shipp, director, producer of a new documentary coming out, talking about the relationship between metal and horror, or the history of metal and horror. So hopefully we're going to get together and talk with him. Until then, we will see you on the other side.
Things no one knows. We're going to die.